A Podcast One production.
Hi, I'm Mark Boris from The Mentor, and welcome to SME Experts. This series gives you access to my trusted team of mentors so that you can get the expert advice you need to make your business a success. I understand better than most that when you run a business, you are time poor. So after you've listened to this episode, go to mentor.com.au where we have all the resources, tools and templates waiting for you to make a start on improving your business. In this episode of SME Experts, CEO of mentor.com.au, Craig West, is getting to the bottom of human resources legislation in this country. And he's doing it with Natasha Hawker from Employee Matters. Now, HR legislation is complicated and the consequences of stuffing it up are very serious. So make sure you comply and make sure you listen to this episode.
As business grows and we employ people, we've got to be really careful not to fall into several traps. We need to know how to use our employees for their benefit and for ours without breaking any of the rules, but also finding out how we get them to engage better and perform better for everyone's benefit. We're going to cover off on all of those issues and probably a whole stack more as we talk about the legal and regulatory issues around employing people to make sure we get it right. Joined today by Natasha Hawker, the Managing Director of Employee Matters, and by definition, obviously in the name, this is about employees, but thanks for joining me, Natasha. Let's have a chat about some of the key things.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to it.
So I guess as the business grows, everybody employs people. You end up, that's one of the first things you do as an investment for your business to grow. But as soon as you do that, there's some issues and there's some potential problems. Obviously, we all need employees because they're about scale and leverage and growing your business and adding new skills that you haven't got. But I guess, why is it important to understand what the issues are here? What do we need to get right?
Yeah, I think you tapped into it when you said that, you know, it's really important to grow your business and you're going to need employees to do that. And you're absolutely right, Craig. In order to get any sort of growth or magnitude of growth, you're going to have employees because you can't possibly do it all yourself. So, however, once you bring on an employee, there are certain legal obligations around employment relations that you are now going to have to adhere to. So, you know, a typical breach is that you have to be compliant with the Fair Work Act, which is number one. You have to understand what modern award you've employed that person under. You have to understand the classification under that award. So where do they fall and what their pay rates are. And if you get that wrong, that's deemed to be a breach of the Fair Work Act. And that can cost you up to $63,000. Yeah, so it's pretty expensive.
Already.
It's serious already. But this is not hard stuff to do when you get the right advice. So I would encourage all of your listeners to get great advice. Fair Work is a good place to start. You can also get some HR advice or some legal advice. And we have a lot of free tools and checklists on our website.
So it's interesting you mentioned straight away three or four different bodies, there's different rules, different legislation. It sounds like there's a lot of things to think about.
There is. And I mean, one of the ones that shocked me was as soon as you have an employee, you have an obligation to set up some workers' compensation. Now, that is mandatory. You don't have a choice. And so I did come across a business that was turning over $7 million a year and they had no workers' comp.
Whoa.
And you will get a fine for back pay of all the previous years that you haven't done anything and you're going to get sent a penalty notice for not doing that as well. So it's around surrounding yourself with people who are great advisors. You can find a lot of this stuff on the web. You know, as I said, the Fair Work website is a huge help and it's a great place to start. But I would encourage to hire well, manage well and exit well and their businesses will grow as a result.
So let's just talk about those three key things. You mentioned start with hiring well, obviously, and selecting people. What are some of the key things to think about there? If we're going to go and hire our first employee or our 101st employee, yeah, doesn't not really different. How do we do that? What do you think about?
Yeah, the key thing is it is what I call an incredibly tight applicant market. What that means, Craig, is that there is a shortage of good quality applicants. So you are going to have to compete very effectively in order to attract the best kind of employees that you can afford. So the best way to do that, and maybe an example first, if I had put an ad out for, in argument's sake, an executive assistant 5 years ago, I would have got 100 applications of which 20 could do the job easily, standing on the head. If I put that same ad out today, I'll get 10, 20 applications. If I'm lucky, two can do the job. One's brilliant, one's very average. So you're already competing with a very small pool of talent. So the best things that you can do is to, one, be a great place to work. You want to attract people because you've got a great culture. The second thing that you need to do is write a great employee value proposition. What's in it for me? Why should I work for Craig? The third thing is to basically build a business where people communicate. People leave leaders and not businesses. So make sure that they're bought into the vision and they understand where they're going with the business. And if you do all of those things right, you'll be able to attract that very small pool and keep them longer term.
Pretty simple when you say it like that, but I bet there's a bit to it. There's a few things you need to do in that process.
Yeah, a great example is write a great job description. You know, it needs to be very clear what you expect from me as your employee and also what success looks like. And give me feedback. One of the big mistakes we see is that business owners, often when we come in to do the nasty part, the exit bit, think George Clooney up in the air, often by that stage, people are at the end of their wits. And so it's often done poorly. And that's why you have a huge number of small businesses at the Fair Work Commission for unfair dismissal complaints. And whereas you've got a probation period, which means that you can basically try before you buy and exit them with no risk whatsoever in that first 6 or 12 months, depending on how many employees you have. So it's really important to get the basics right.
And that's just part of how you set the contract up and how you employ them, et cetera.
Yes. Contracts are really important. Please, please, please do not borrow one from a friend. A classic example was that I had a client who bought two contracts to me. And literally when I compared them, one had the title casual employee and one had the title permanent employee. And they were exactly the same. So all these casual employees were accruing long service leave, annual leave, everything else.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really important that you get a great contract written by a lawyer to protect you and to protect your employees so everyone's very clear how the arrangement works.
Okay, so assuming we go and get the right hire and we've got the right person in the business, what next? What do you need to do next to make sure this is working?
Yeah, I think one is to conduct, you know, feedback sessions. You know, they don't need to be onerous. 4 questions. What are you doing well? What do you need to improve? What training do you need? And where do you want to go? And if you just ask those 4 questions every 6 months, get them to self-assess and you give them feedback, you're going to be on the right track. And I think the other thing is around trying to get an organization where everybody's clear the vision. So we share all of our strategy with our team. So everyone knows what our 1-year, 3-year and 10-year plan is. And so they're all on the journey with us. And they know the things that they do every day, if they're following our values, are going to help us achieve those goals. And they feel bought in as a result. So our engagement levels, and engagement is the measure of discretionary effort. So what's going to keep me working back at 11 o'clock at night with you, Craig? Because I'm bought into your business, not because you're paying me. And when you have engagement levels of above 75% compared to the lowest percentile, you get 21% more productivity and 20% more profitability. Now, I'm not sure about
your
listeners.
Money.
It's massive. You think about what that does. So building engaged workforce, and a lot of that's around communication. It's around authenticity. It's about feeling good about the organization that you work for, and that they're giving back is another important one for employees.
Wow. So 20% improvement is
massive.
Substantial.
Harvard did the research on that. So, you know, it's really interesting. Organizations where, you know, in the old days, we used to keep our information very clear. No one knew what we were earning. You know, everyone thought that the owners were earning an absolute mozza. And in actual fact, if you communicate, you know, more effectively with your team, they're going to get into it and they're going to want to help you achieve those goals, and especially if you reward them for achieving them. So an example being is we have a team, we had our best financial year ever. Got a team, a lot of them are mums, and they don't do anything for themselves. So what did we do? We gave them all 2-hour, hour and a half massage vouchers. So it wasn't transferable. It had to be used on them. And that was a surprise. So that's a great way of just saying, great work. We achieved what we wanted to, and here's your time.
Yeah. You mentioned exit before, and we'll get onto that in a moment, but I'm interested in the structure and the system that you've got to make sure there's. I read something in the paper, I reckon, every second day about someone's been taken to court because they didn't pay people the right amount of money, or they didn't give them the right into. And we're talking some
serious
in some cases, some large companies with some serious fines and so on. How do we make sure those things don't get out of control as we grow? We're getting more and more people.
Yeah.
How do we keep that under control?
I think we've got a bit of an issue here in the sense that, unfortunately, the legal framework that we're working in isn't possibly keeping up with where we're going as a world, where we need to be able to tap into a variety of skills in lots of different ways. There are mainly four instruments to hire. One is a volunteer, which you can do. I still suggest you have an agreement and don't take advantage. Obviously, in not-for-profit, that's a really common one. But if you're starting a business, I had a team member who still works for me today who volunteered for me for 3 months because she just wanted my business to get off the ground. The second one is around freelancing. So you might go into a site like Expert 360, 99 Designs, Freelancer, and you buy in those skills for a specific project.
This is the gig economy.
Yeah, gig economy.
Uber drivers,
absolutely.
Freelancer, all that sort of stuff.
And there's some interesting stuff happening in that space. And then you've got either employees, whether they're casual, permanent part-time or permanent full-time. The last one, and this is the one which I would caution listeners on, is what we call independent contractors. And the reason for that is it's often the go-to place for most small businesses. I'll hire someone, that's the easiest way to do it. There's low risk, there's some separation. The issue is there that Fair Work don't like independent contractors, and nor do the ATO. Fair Work don't like them because they feel that the employer is trying to avoid paying entitlements like long service leave, annual leave and so on, and superannuation. But quick tip, if you have got a legitimate independent contractor, you still have to pay them super. And the ATO don't like them because guess what? When you have an independent contractor, they pay tax at the end of the financial year.
Yeah.
Pay-as-you-go employees are paying all the way. It's a cash flow issue. So they make it very complex. It's a multifaceted test, and it's everything from, and there's too many to go into, but an example would be, do they carry a business card with your logo on it? Do they use your equipment or their equipment? Do you direct the work? Can they outsource that work to whoever they want without your permission? And it goes on. Yeah. So if you are seen to be breaching, that's called sham contracting. And a fine for a sham contracting breach is up to $63,000 per breach. So if you've got four contractors and you're doing it the same way, that's four times. But here's the stinger in the towel, plus back pay of entitlements for the 2 or 3 years that you had them. So that's 2 or 3 years of annual leave, 2 or 3 years of super.
It's
expensive. So it's important to get advice when you're starting out of what's the right way to hire. And then the second piece is around the legal framework. So make sure you have a great job description that will help drive what the modern award is. Work out what classification they are under that modern award because that will drive their pay rates. And I'll give you a tip. At the moment, Fair Work are going after underpayments in a big way. So I would encourage all your listeners that do have employees just to do a double check because the rates of pay move up every year just to make sure that they're still paying the right pay scales and that the role hasn't evolved and then suddenly they're a level above and they're owed an extra $20 an hour or whatever the case may be.
So how do they do that? Where do they go to get that information?
Yeah, if you want to, you've got Fair Work there. That's 131394. You can use a lawyer, which is an expensive way, or you can use an outsourced HR to come through and do those assessments for you and provide you with the advice.
Yeah, which if you're talking about fines of $63,000, the cost of a lawyer or an outsourced HR person is probably
it
not that important.
It could put you under, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's the sad thing. You know, I think Australian business owners are the hardest working Australians I know. And they're actually the great risk takers in our society. And we need to support them and make it easier for them to turn their employees into assets rather than liabilities.
The next step then is, hopefully, we don't get to this always, but sometimes we have to, exiting. So either the employee's leaving us or we've got a performance issue. And I guess I hear a lot of people talking about performance management and how onerous those rules are and all the things you have to put in place. Tell us a little bit about that. What does that look like?
Yeah, well, what I will say is that the number of unfair dismissal complaints at the Fair Work Commission are increasing. And it would be probably no surprise to learn that most of them are actually small businesses. And the reason for that is they're not getting advice and they're just doing it themselves and winging it. And the other issue here, Craig, is that there's still a lot of people that believe that it's three strikes, you're out. You know, I gave them two verbal warnings and then I did the written, so I'm all okay. And that's not the case anymore. It hasn't been the case since 2010. So the issue here is that when you get done for unfair dismissal, which was the termination unfair, unjust or unreasonable, you are up to either up to 6 months' salary and or reinstatement? Would you want your person who was the poor performer back? And you don't. The answer is you don't. So the way that you can protect yourself is you must understand the process. I am a great believer in get rid of your non-performers, because small business can't afford them. Big business can. They shouldn't have them either. But big business, if it's 10...
they can absorb them, yeah.
And 150, yeah, they can absorb them. If you've got five and one of them's dreadful,
yeah,
you're in a whole lot of pain.
That's a big problem, yeah, absolutely.
It's a massive pain. So understand what the process is. It is quite a directed process, but you can work through it. Have a support person. This is the number one tip. If I'm about to have a difficult conversation with you and it's around your performance, I would say to you, Craig, we're going to have a challenging conversation. Would you like to bring a support person along? Now, that has let the cat out of the bag that it's probably not going to be your favourite conversation. But the reason is it's to provide you with some emotional support. They're not there to be your advocate, but they're there to say, hey, remember when Natasha said that? I think what she meant was this. So to take the notes and because they're going through emotional turmoil sitting opposite you as you're going through that conversation. The second thing is to document everything. So often as us, as business owners having those conversations for the first time, we're like, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what to say if she starts to cry or if he starts to get angry at me. So actually script it so you can prepare your notes and you know what is going to happen. Document everything. So you should have a scribe with you or record it. Ask to record it on Rev. Great tool. And just if they say no, you can't record it without their permission. That's fine. But you can record it with somebody handwriting it. And then slide it across and say, can you sign that as an accurate account of our meeting? And those little tips, there's more, but those little tips will start to protect you. The reason being, Craig, is the reason why you wanted to get rid of them is in most cases reasonable and valid. And if we spoke to anyone in the street, they go, she's got to go. Natasha's got to go. But the way you do it is where you come unstuck, and that's when you're exposed to those fines. So the tip here is hire better, so hire great talent, and, you know, have robust conversations during their probation. And if they're no good and you haven't worked it out in the first 3 to 6 months, then I'd be challenging you about...
There's something wrong.
Yeah, there's something wrong. Exit then, and then there's no risk.
Yeah, so in terms of the actual exit, obviously it's not always performance management. Someone's decided to move on or do something different, or their spouse has been transferred somewhere else, so they had to leave anyway. How do you handle that? What's different about that side?
Yeah, well, in that situation, it typically is a resignation. And I would argue that build an alumni, because an alumni, what I mean by that is when great people leave your team, stay connected with them, because they might become a client, an advocate, or they could come back. And we've had one of our team members who left us for another job and it didn't work out. And we'd left the door very much open for her. And she rang me up and she said, Natasha, it didn't work out. Can I come back? I will have you back with open arms, Stacey, because she
is
great.
You know them, they're already trained, they know your stuff.
They're up to speed straight away, so I would really connect with them. There is the other type of exit, which might be more complex again, which is not necessarily performance related, but misconduct related. So where somebody is behaving poorly, whether it's at a work function or at a conference, any work function that's off-site, and this is a surprise to people, is actually an extension of the workplace.
Yeah.
So the same obligations exist. So in order, and I would suggest too with the recent Me Too movement, and I suggested or I predicted when that came out that we would have an increase in the number of sexual harassment complaints, and the reason for that is two things. One is awareness, increased awareness, and increased acceptance. So it's really important when you're putting people into an environment where there's lots of alcohol and partying that you do these key things. One is have a code of conduct policy so everyone's very clear about what professional behaviour is and isn't.
What's expected.
Communicate before the event. Say to them, guys, it's our annual work function. We would love you all to have a good time. But just remember, what happens in this event needs to adhere to the code of conduct. And if anyone's misbehaving, then they'll be escorted home and sent home in a cab. Always try and keep a couple of managers that are watching what they're drinking so that they can, because you as a manager have a duty of care to provide a safe workplace. So I think that's really, really important. And then if you do that, then everybody's going to have a great event, but do it safely. And I sound like the fun police here, but I truly believe your employees are your greatest asset. And if you hire well, manage well, and exit well, you'll increase your productivity. So we talk about building employee assets for our clients, highly engaged workforce, people who will, you know, absolutely do their best for you, who work above and beyond, then your business will grow and potentially scale.
Couple of topical issues just to cover off. Interns, I'm hearing this can be done really badly. What are some of the traps there? What do people need to be aware of?
Yeah, I would have to say that interns is an area fraught with a bit of danger, and a lot of business owners just have misconceptions around that. And the reason is that most people feel that intern is free labour. Equals free labour. And the reality is that's not always the case. And in actual fact, it's more often not the case. Let me explain why. So there are certain degrees that have a component. My brother's a GP, for example, where they go off and they have to do a term at a hospital. And that's part of their degree. They don't get paid. That is part of their training. I think the misconception is that people feel that anyone who wants to come and volunteer their services and happens to still be at uni qualifies as an intern. They are only free labour where it forms part of their degree. Now, there are some organisations that specialise in this and will offer that support. But otherwise, if they're just coming to you and they're saying, I just want to get some experience, I'd love to work for you, I'm a university student, you can't go, great, you're an intern, that's free labour. You have to go, great, we'd love to have you, and pay them the minimum wage, which I think off the top of my head is about $18.86 at the moment, plus super. So it's not a lot of money. And what I would suggest is they often bring a skill set that you and I are a similar age, Craig, that we don't have. And they'll often be absolutely incredibly awesome at social media or technology. So not only it's a two-way street, you might be teaching them some skills, but they're giving back. One tip for you is if you've got free labor and that's not part of their degree and you're making money off them, and I think the statistic I heard was 75% in Australia of intern relationships were incorrect, then you're in trouble. Now, what does that mean? We kept talking about, bring it back to why do we need to know this, is that's a breach of the Fair Work Act. So you come back to that fine of up to $63,000. I'm not going to say that in every time it's going to be that amount, but it could be. And I think the other thing that we haven't touched on yet is that's a company fine. There is also the situation where you personally could be liable as the director of your business. And the fine there is $12,600 at the extent of it.
Still substantial.
There's still substantial amounts. So I would encourage you to do internships, but maybe depending on what your industry is, go to the leading TAFE or the leading university in that and say, who is your number one guru student this year? We'd like to offer them a placement. If it can be done under their degree, perfect, because it's free labour. If it can't be, I would suggest to you, you'll get an incredible amount of value if you pick well and you go for that top student. So I would encourage people to do internships, but make sure that they're really internships and that we're not using slave labour.
Domestic violence leave's new. Tell me about that.
So I think the scary thing is the statistic is that one woman a week in Australia is dying at the hands of her partner, which is really scary. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, it's like, how can we help? And one of the greatest ways we can help women is to provide them some security and some job security and financial security to enable them to be able to leave their domestic violence situation. So what the government did was they brought out a domestic violence leave policy, which came in on the 1st of August 2018. What that means is across almost every award in Australia, you have an obligation to provide up to 5 days unpaid leave to help support somebody in your workplace that says, I need to go and see a lawyer or I need to go and get some medical support. And they need to provide some evidence for that. You can't just claim that leave, which can be a bit awkward. But I think if you're a great employer, you'd be wanting to support them through that. The other thing that you could do, and it's often very confronting for business owners because they go, I don't have the skills to deal with this. One of the best ways you could do that is to roll out, and we do this for our clients, what we call an employee assistance program. And what that is it's a 24-hour counselling line where you can say to your employees, we're a great place to work, but we know things go bad at times. And sometimes you might have a family member that's struggling with an illness. They can go and access this helpline and you will never know who's done it. Yep. You just get a bill.
Perfect.
So some organisations are going one step further and they're actually paying that leave. So I think the police have done it, nurses and another large organisations are going, you know what, it's 5 days paid leave. And then again, that comes part of that employee value proposition. Why work for us? Because we care about you and we want to make sure you're supported if you find yourself in that circumstance. So I think it's a great way that we're trying to tackle a very complex problem. Yeah. It's not going to solve it, but it's a long way further than where we were.
Okay. So in terms of small business owners out there employing people and thinking, what's your number one tip? What's the number one thing? You've covered 20 different areas, which is fantastic, but what's the number one thing people should take away?
I think the number one thing to protect you is get advice at the beginning. Get it right first off. It's not that expensive to get the advice and it could save you. And then the second tip I have to say, because I'm incredibly passionate about interviewing, people go on gut. They don't do great interviews and you reap what you sow.
Heaps of things we've covered, lots of really interesting and important issues, not just the scary fines and the dramas, but I think the point you made about your employees are a big asset, and if you get this right, not only do you get it right and don't have to worry about fines, but productivity, profitability, growth, better performance. Fantastic information. Thanks for coming in. It's been really good.
My pleasure.
Now that you've heard from the expert, go to mentor.com.au and you'll find the tools and resources you need to take the next step towards a successful business.
SME Experts was presented by Craig West and created in collaboration with Podcast One Australia. Producer Liv Proud, sound production by Darcy Thompson. To hear more episodes, go to podcastone.com.au. Download the Podcast One app or search SME Experts on Apple Podcasts.